Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour. In a few moments you can hear the third of my Holy Land specials. As you may already know, in fact, on the 7th of January I travelled across the Holy Land with a delegation of bishops from Europe and North America. A delegation known as the Holy Land Coordination, and part of the Coordination of Episcopal Conferences in support of the Church of the Holy Land and the Assembly of Catholic Ordinaries of the Holy Land. This delegation was on its annual pilgrimage, their 13th, which this year focused in a special way on suffering and vulnerable people. My story begins today on the 7th of January. It was a Monday, and we were just south of Jordan's capital, Amman, visiting Zarqa, where many of the Syrian refugees have sought refuge in camps. The visit there was part of an effort to urge churches and the international community to more effectively respond to the humanitarian emergencies caused by the conflict in Syria and the continued refugee crisis from other Mideast wars, an issue I spoke to you at length in last week's programme. But in a few moments I'd like to shine the spotlight on Catholic education in the Holy Land, an issue the bishops focused on in their final communique following this year's pilgrimage, in which they referred to Pope Benedict XVI's words during his visit to the region in 2009. I've asked Sean Patrick Lover to read a segment from this communique, which refers to education.
We are also called to recognize and tell others how faith in God brings light into the lives of people in the Holy Land. One of the ways in which this happens is the Church's commitment to education, a tangible investment in the future. Nowhere is this more evident than in the University of Bethlehem, where we were struck by the stories from students, and the American University of Madaba in Jordan. In 2009, Pope Benedict XVI called upon staff and students in the region to be builders of a just and peaceful society, composed of peoples of various religions and ethnic backgrounds.
But getting back to my Holy Land experience with the bishops, on Monday the 7th, then, on a rainy and windy day, we visited the new American University of Madaba, south of Amman, an educational venture launched by the Catholic Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, Fuad Tual, himself a Madaba native. On this occasion, I filed this report from a mobile phone. I know the sound quality is dreadful and that presenting your own report often sounds silly, but I decided to do it anyway in an effort to give you a little on-the-spot flavour.
Madaba, in the heart of Jordan, was home to the Old Testament Moabites. It later became one of the oldest centres of Christianity in the world, located near biblical Mount Nebo, from where Moses looked out onto the promised land, the land of milk and honey. It's most famous for a stunning great mosaic which depicts the Holy Land, the oldest such map ever discovered. A clever colour picture spattered with palm trees, fish and animals, representing cities like Jerusalem, Jericho, of course, the nearby Jordan where Jesus was baptized. That's pride from the past. Today, Madaba is famous for another map, this time for the future, a roadmap of excellence and learning for new generations of students. It's here that the Latin patriarch, his Beatitude Fuad Tual, originally from Madaba himself, pushed to found a Catholic university, the American University of Madaba, an eco-friendly architectural project sliding smoothly into a barren and deserted plain. Established by His Majesty King Abdullah II in the land so often referred to as that of the living stones, its cornerstone was rather significantly blessed by Pope Benedict XVI in May 2009. It aims to be a beacon of light for the entire Middle Eastern area and beyond. To date, students come from 53 different nationalities. As the president of the university, Dr. George Hajboun, told me, it's intended as a model roadmap for an oasis of peace and understanding, a roadmap of science and wisdom. What's certain is that it's a modern roadmap and a legacy to future generations on the part of the Latin Patriarchate of Jerusalem, which has been involved in education here in the Holy Land since 1854, during the Ottoman rule. Dr. Hajboun described this as the crown of universities in Jordan, and in May, His Majesty King Abdullah II will be in Madama for the official inauguration. But this project in the land of milk and honey is an ambitious one. Budgets play into great visions. The budget to start the project was there. But what about the running of it in the short term? The people of the Holy Land, a troubled area of the world rife with conflict and upheaval, need to sow seeds of hope for future generations. The last thing they need is a cathedral in the desert. May God bless the project.
And now getting back to studio quality, I'd like to share with you an interview I did with the guest of honour on this occasion. He's the chairman of the university, His Royal Highness Prince Mired bin Raad. Your Royal Highness, you're the chairman of the Board of Trustees of the American University of Madaba. This university represents a beacon of light for Jordan, both within the nation and the surrounding countries. It's in the midst of a troubled area of the world. Would you agree that it's a beacon of light?
I believe so. I think so. And that this is the reason that I have come on board and accepted to become the president of the Board of Trustees, because I believe in this institution and I believe in the message. I believe in its vision. And I think there's a lot of good work that we can do in nurturing our students and making them become mature, respectable adults in the future.
You want your students to be enlightened here. Is that also in terms of Muslim-Christian relations here?
I think it's enlightened in the general sense, of course, in the religious sense as well. Enlightened to know more about the world that we live in, that to have a look at the world with open eyes, and not to have an ostrich mentality. We need to see the world as it is. Sometimes we here in the Middle East think that the whole world is revolving around us, which is, of course, not the truth. We need to respect and learn more about other cultures and on how people live throughout the world. And
I think in that respect, you have a long tradition of welcoming refugees in Jordan. Yes. That's something you must be proud of, no?
Yes, of course. I mean, you know, it's important to us to do what we can for our neighbors. And I believe our neighbors would do that the same for us if we were in that situation. You know, hospitality is very much inbred in our culture and in our being. And it is important, you know, you need to look after your neighbor. The work that the Catholic Church does in Jordan is tremendous. I mean, the Catholic Church has been involved in multitude of endeavors that have been of tremendous, tremendous benefit for Jordan, and has been very much involved in education for the past 150 years. And this institution, the university, has been a result of that.
As you've just heard, the Catholic Church's involvement in education in the Holy Land is well established. Significantly, by the way, one of the faculty members I spoke to at this Catholic university in Madaba told me that despite being Muslim, she felt at ease there having done all her schoolings in Catholic schools. So when I visited Bethlehem University, the only Catholic university in the West Bank, I was not surprised to hear that at this university in the little town of Bethlehem, where you wake up to the muezzin's call for prayer and where the mosque stands opposite the Church of the Nativity, Christian students are a minority. For the record, this institution was founded in the aftermath of that first historic apostolic visit by a Roman pontiff to the Holy Land on the part of Paul VI. It was 1964. It was then supported by the Latin Patriarchate of Jerusalem, run by the De La Salle brothers, and is open to all faiths. On my visit there, I enjoyed the opportunity of chatting to some of the students. I'd like to share with you this conversation. By the way, I purposely omitted their names, although they did give them to me, and they said they didn't have a problem with my mentioning them.
It means a lot to me to live in the Holy Land, to be a Christian who lives here. Although it's difficult because we struggle a lot, but it means a lot to me.
Yeah, here living in Palestine has been an honor for me, because many people, like, their biggest wish is to live here.
You're lucky to live here, but there are checkpoints everywhere.
Of course, we are very limited here, like with the wall and everything. Like most of our lands were taken away from us, and like many people were put in jail for no particular reason. It really touches us, and it's always in our memory that there's somebody on the other side who controls everything and limits our lives, and we can't do anything about it.
The other dark side of our life is the Israeli occupation, which limits almost every aspect of our lives. We don't have freedom to transport in our own country. Transporting from one Palestinian city to another Palestinian city is very, very difficult. The road that would take 20 minutes, in the usual, we have to travel for 3 hours in twisted ways. Also, as she mentioned, we don't have an airport, so for instance, if we want to travel outside the country, we have to go to Jordan, which is also a nightmare, traveling to Jordan, because we have to pass like 3 checkpoints, Palestinian and the Jordanian and an Israeli checkpoint, across the bridge, the King Abdullah Bridge.
It takes you like half a day for like...
Yeah, you sometimes we think about traveling and the trouble of traveling to Jordan for months.
Forget about
it. Yeah.
Here at this university, you have a lot of Muslims. Are you all Christians, the three of you?
No, yeah. I'm a Muslim.
You're a Muslim?
Actually, yeah.
And it seems like you get on well together. Is that true? I'll ask you because you're the Muslim.
Yeah. It's actually, in Bethlehem University in general, we don't discriminate. For me personally, I had many situations that I think that my friends are Christians and they turn up to be Muslims and the other way around. After like 2 or 3 months of being in interaction with them, it really gives us a message that we don't care about our differences, but we care about that we're people who live together in the same place and we respect each other and we have nothing but respect and love for the other side.
You mentioned the fact that it's difficult for you to be friends with Jews of your peer group or Israelis of your peer group.
Because they are not allowing us to have this kind of relationship. You know, with all the things that they do, like if I go and make friends with them, I don't think their parents are going to let me, or my parents are going to let me, because past generations, and also this new generation, are more understanding, I think, from my point of view. I can make friends with them, but also I can't forget. You know, it's still like, well, you killed my mom. No, you murdered my father. It's like this. You know?
You were saying about your parents, there's a legacy from your parents of mistrust.
Yes, they don't trust. And it's not easy, also.
Also, someone was making the point that at checkpoints, if someone from your peer group could be with a machine gun at the checkpoint.
Yeah. Actually, one of my friends here mentioned that he was like in a conference that brings Palestinians and Israelis together and try to make them like, discuss the situation here, and one of the Israeli guys asked him to why don't we discuss the matter, the conflict, and my friend's answer was we can't discuss things outside Palestine, why don't we discuss them in Palestine, but still in Palestine my friend would be passing through a checkpoint while the Israeli person would be letting him or not letting him pass through the checkpoint. So it's not a fair deal because one side is with guns and with the most sophisticated weapons ever built by human beings, and the other side is like barehanded and can't even defend his home while being bombarded by the F-16 or the Apache helicopter.
You wanted to say something?
Well, I have a friend in the summer. She went with the scout to a youth conference with the Jewish. See, they are normal people like us. They also struggle because they don't want to be, most of them don't want to become a soldiers. So she said they are like us. We mustn't hate them.
I think generally you were all saying that you are viewed as terrorists abroad because of your nationality.
And like people will not interact with us in the same way they interact with other people. Like they know you're from Palestine. Oh, okay.
What about the Arab Spring? How is that in a broader context? How does that impact on you?
The Arab Spring represents change in general, which could be good and could be bad, especially for the Palestinian case. But we're like observing the situation, trying to understand as much as we can from the situation and the different variables and the different influences of different countries, outside countries. And also we're hoping the best for our brothers in the other Arab countries, and we hope that this will bring a better future for the Middle East in general.
Talking about a better future, can you just briefly tell me what your dreams are?
Actually, my dream is to build a software company here in Palestine. After studying for the master's and working outside for a couple of years, I plan to come back here.
Well, I hope I can go to Italy to continue my study, then come back here and to build a family. My dreams actually hopefully aren't here. I want to finish my studies here first, and then I want to learn as many languages as I can, because many tourists come here, and whenever I see one, I will tell them, like, everything they can know about this place.
But you all want to stay here?
Yes. Yeah, eventually, yeah, sure. It's our land, that's our home, and we have to stay here and live here with our families and our friends and the people we love.
I want to live here and die here. It will be like an honor.
And my thanks there go to the students for sharing with me all this information. Prior to my conversation with them, they answered questions. At the end of this session, they asked all present to pass on the information regarding the dramatic reality described by them. Tell the truth, they said, when you go home. We are under occupation, struggling to live in our land where even freedom of movement is denied us. And as another student put it, Israeli, she said, paint us as terrorists. But we are Christians, we are human, and we have rights. At this point, I'd like you to join me for a conversation with someone who was among those accompanying the delegation of bishops taking part in this year's Holy Land Coordination. He's Father John Peter Pearson, director of the Southern African Bishops' Conference Parliamentary Office. His words on that occasion were of encouragement to the students. I'd like to repeat them here. Quoting from St. Teresa of Avila, he said, "Even this will pass." "Don't give up," he quipped. "The fight is yours, but remember, the victory will also be yours." Father John Peters, I thought, might be an interesting point of view as a South African who grew up during apartheid. I spoke to him immediately following a visit we made to the Kremisen area, an area where plans for a new segment of the separation wall are underway. A story picked up in a big way by the media recently. At any rate, following our visit to this area and having seen the dramatic situation regarding this wall, that snaking Israeli wall begun in 2002 was very much on both our minds. Stay tuned.
If you ever have the opportunity to look at the graffiti on the wall, you'll see many references to apartheid and to the Berlin Wall. So it carries that same purpose to divide, to safeguard privilege and benefit and so forth. And this was very reminiscent of South Africa, very reminiscent of the crudeness and the harshness of what ideology can do when it becomes so linked to one ideological perspective. And just listening to the Salesian father who spoke to us was also reminiscent of how ordinary people get taken up into struggles for justice. And maybe that's the little spark of hope that's there, that ordinary people reach a point where they say, we're not going to allow systems that dehumanize us, that just take land on spurious arguments. We're not going to allow these to define our lives, and we're going to stand up for our rights. And history is full of that, isn't it? The Philippines, South Africa, where people just say, well, no, we're not going to allow this to happen to us any longer. So that was a little bit of deja vu for me, a little bit of, you know, history that seemed to be revisited. The fact that we have to come here every year means that the problems still persist. Otherwise, in a sense, we wouldn't have to come back. We wouldn't have to express solidarity if the situation was improving. But we do come out to express solidarity. We do come out to assure the beleaguered Christian community that they have friends outside and that their struggles are not forgotten and that it's part of the contemporary way in which the gospel is being lived out and played out. And so I think it's important for us to come every year.
You grew up under apartheid, presumably, no?
I did, indeed, yes.
When you come here, does it bring back painful memories?
Yes, painful memories. You know, the searing pain you feel when you see people who are in a position that you were in not so many years ago. But by the same token, I think having emerged, in a sense, at least politically, from that apartheid situation, I think the presence of people who've come through those situations in this country also offers a sign of hope that, as St. Teresa of Avila used to say, even this can pass. And so, you know, to say it brings back painful memories, it certainly does. I was really quite emotional this afternoon when we were just looking out over the wall and the land. Also, in a sense, you know, more determined to be encouraging of people to say, you know, this doesn't have to last. And let's look for ways, creative ways, non-violent ways of ensuring that we leave a legacy for your children that's better than what you've got now. So it's painful, but it's also, no, we've got to tackle these challenges. In the region, people are seeing education as one way of restoring dignity and equipping people for the future, because while we resist, which was a phrase we heard today, you've also got to equip yourself for what lies beyond the wall and the confiscation of land. And so, I mean, I see little pinpricks of hope.
You need patience, as someone pointed out today.
You do. You need patience, but a patience that's filled with activity. I think patience means also not trying to force a result, but working in a way that allows you to do your best and to invest in the future. We live in an instant gratification type society where people want everything immediately. They also want political solutions immediately. And I think when we caution patience, as opposed to resignation, we're saying, invest, look at the best options. Be aware that those things don't just come about at once and that they are the results, the fruits of often protracted struggles. So, you know, be prepared to invest in the long haul.
A big thank you there to Father John Peter Pearson, Director of the Southern African Bishops' Conference Parliamentary Office. And that brings an end to this series, focusing in a special way on the Holy Land Coordination 2013. If you wish to know more about their final communique, you may check out our website at www.coordination.org. rv.va and then click on the English World icon. Finally, on a totally different note, this past Sunday, Pope Benedict XVI launched his first tweets in Latin. Since then, thousands of people have signed up to his Latin Twitter account. Latin, the universal language of the Catholic Church, becomes the 9th language used for papal tweets. It was an event which provided me with the opportunity of putting all kinds of queries relating to this venture to our popular Latin lover, Carmelite Father Reginald Foster, who describes Benedict XVI in Latin as Pontifex Breviloquens. You said, "I almost jumped out of my skin when I remembered that Cicero says this in the first word of his letter to Atticus."
Which I have right in front of my nose, right here. Yes. Well, Cicero said the same thing. Gaudio, with joy, exilui. I jumped up with joy.
In his letter to Atticus.
Yes. Cum primorum verborum, Attico scriptorum recordare. When I was remembering, or because of remembering, the first words written to Atticus.
So what's the connection with tweeting?
I'll tell you why. Because on February 5th of the year 49, before the Common Era, Caesar had crossed the Rubicon a month before. Things for Cicero were getting bad because Cicero and his political party, the Pompeians, the Republicans, were losing. He's down in Capua, and he doesn't know what to do, and he writes to Atticus, and he says, this is how Shackleton Bailey translates this in 1968. He's very British. And he said, the facts of the situation now make me laconic. Laconic, which no one understands today, but it's a Britishism. That is to say, a man of a few words. In Latin, it's out of this world, and we have once in Latinity, breviloquentem. Breviloquentem, one word.
So tweeting is breviloquence.
Breviloquence is a man who is speaking briefly or shortly. Very nice. Breviloquens.
So pontifex.
Pontifex breviloquens is a tweeting pontiff.
Is a tweeting pope.
Yes, yes. Why not? Pontifex breviloquens. He's a pope who uses a few words, period. And then Cicero goes on, Iam me tempus ipsum facit. The circumstance itself already is making me breviloquentem, a man of a few words. From that, we can derive all the words you want for tweeters and tweetings in the whole story.
So let's go on a tweeting date.
What does that mean, a tweet? Exeamus breviloquutum. Let's go out to tweet. Okay, people would understand that. The Latinists would understand that. Old accusative, supine. Let's go out to tweet. Or, in the subjunctive, inter nos breviloquamur. Let's tweet among ourselves. Breviloquamur in the subjunctive. Or you could make like a command form. Sententiam tuam breviloquere. Tweet your idea. Sententiam tuam breviloquere. Speak shortly or briefly your idea. Oh, you can do everything. It's beautiful in Latin.
And a big thank you there to our popular Latin lover, Carmelite Father Reginald Foster, who's currently teaching in the United States, Latin of course, but who was for many years and under many popes, papal Latinist. And that brings me up to time. I do hope you enjoyed this broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, and I'll be back again at this same time tomorrow, so be sure to join me then. Laudetur Jesus Christus.